All right, back right at it here, the Kevin Walsh Show. Kevin Walsh with you, and gonna talk some football on this Friday edition. Flag football, the Olympics, the NFL, what that could look like. I put together what I thought was the best possible roster. I got to be honest, I've looked around. It's the best possible roster. I think some people have pieced together teams maybe without watching some film. I'm grinding the flag football tape. We'll also talk around the best coaches in the league as Nick Sirianni was given his extension. That coming just before the Eagles saw the tush push not be banned. I was almost at one point going to do all football here, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has now been given league MVP and taken a 2-0 series lead in the Western Conference Finals. And the current conversations around SGA, I'm pretty disappointed in people. I really am. Right now, I would say the most consistent talk around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander involves his free throw attempts. He's taken 29 through two games of the conference finals. I get it's a ton. But that really shouldn't be the main thing when it comes to SGA discourse. I noticed leaving the series against Denver, Shai seemingly did not chip away at the crown of best player in the world, owned by, in many eyes, Nikola Jokic. And if you believe Jokic is the best player, okay. What I can't believe is that right now, nobody is campaigning it's SGA. All of the conversations around this Thunder team seem to either be operating about how they are inevitable and will be crowned champions in a couple of weeks' time, or around SGA's free throw attempts. Somehow, nobody is interested in making the case that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best player in the world. Usually, well, almost always, I prefer you do a set of rankings before the season and you adjust when the season's over. You know, that's how you try and do it when you're ranking the best guys in the world, because you can get too caught up in a December run. I try not to, if you adjust too much for playoffs, it's too dismissive of the regular season. Entering this year, I thought Jokic was the best player in the world. I did have SGA as the second best player in the world. The way I do it, that I felt good about it. Both were 1 and 2 in the MVP race. SGA outplayed Luka in the series, despite Dallas beating the Thunder last year. That was somehow... apparently, nobody knew that. It's fine. But you just, the way that conversation went. So to me, the best player in the world was very likely by the end of this season going to be one of those two guys. Well, instead of waiting, since nobody else is seemingly prepared to watch SGA and actually acknowledge what he's doing, I'll make the case that he's the best player in the world then. It's a pretty easy one to make. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win league MVP and finals MVP in the same season, which is something that has not been done since LeBron did it in Miami. Let that settle in. That's how good of a season SGA is having. Now, if they do not win the title, right, then it's certainly way more open. But you have to acknowledge where Shai and the Thunder are being priced in the market. And I think it would be almost stunning if I would not end up with OKC as my pick to win the title. I certainly expect them to win this series against Minnesota. The Thunder, by the way, are minus 340 as we sit here to win the championship. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is minus 1,900 to win conference finals MVP. And again, more importantly, minus 320 to win NBA finals MVP. something that Steph never did, Durant never did, Giannis never did, Jokic never did. Nobody since LeBron has won finals MVP and regular season MVP in the same season. So when you take a look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is certainly an impactful two-way player, what is it that is holding everyone back? Because I was, again, pretty surprised that off of the series against the Nuggets, there was not more of a conversation. See, nobody had the conversation, did Shai pass Jokic? And Nikola Jokic had a down series. He had two absolutely brilliant basketball games in games 1 and 5. He was excellent in game 6. He was also, in this series, responsible for a 3-game stretch where he was bad. And more than bad by his standards, but certainly bad just kind of across the board, no matter any way you slice it. Jokic in game 2, 17 points on 37.5% shooting. 8 boards, 6 assists. For him, that is a nightmare of a game. He fouled out. Then he had 20-16-6, 0 of 10 from 3. That was the game they won in overtime. In game 4, 27-13, just 3 assists, 32% from the field. If you evaluate the Jokic series and the Shai series, SGA scored, if you round up, because he was at 29.7, 30 a game, 53% from the field, with 6.5 rebounds and 6.5 assists. And of course, won the series. Jokic was at 28.4 points, so we'll call it 28.5, on 48% from the field, 14 rebounds, and 6 assists. I think you, if you just take it in the totality, Shai wins the argument. If you score it like a boxing match, a UFC fight, game by game, who's my winner, I could see Jokic 4-3. I could see it, but again, Shai won that series. And to suggest, I saw someone say, well, Jokic was emphatically the best player in that series. No, he wasn't. He absolutely was not. And the thing with Shai, and why I think, the conversation should be shifting, this isn't some flash in the pan. This is not some surprise. These were the expectations for the Oklahoma City Thunder entering this season, win the Western Conference. And then likely win the championship at some point in the middle of the year, they did flip to favorites. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did not just burst onto the scene. Yes, he won MVP. He finished second a season ago, receiving the second most first place votes. SGA has now averaged 30 plus points per game in 3 consecutive seasons. Since Michael Jordan did that in the mid-90s, the list of players to have 3 straight years of 30-plus points per game. Giannis, Harden, SGA. Embiid didn't qualify what would have been the 3rd year. Kobe only did it 2 consecutive seasons. LeBron's never had that type of stretch with the scoring. KD didn't hit the ceiling. Steph didn't hit the ceilings of 30 points a game. I'm not telling you that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the greatest scorer the league's ever seen, but he's on one of the best scoring runs the league has seen. It's undoubtable. If you right now had to set the over-under for SGA finals MVPs, when you look at the youth of this Thunder team, is that number 2.5? If Shai wins finals MVP this year and wins one more, I would say that's about what you would expect. If he goes over 2.5, we're talking an all-time career. If he goes and lands at 2, that is, still super strong. He's 26. He'll be 27 at the beginning of next season. What's the over-under on MVPs for SGA? You know, I mean, Giannis and Jokic are always in the race, but is it possible that those guys have won their last MVPs? Absolutely. For Shea, it would be stunning. Again, 27 entering next year. He's in the prime MVP winning situation. Maybe you want to say regular season MVPs and finals MVPs. What's the over-under for Shea if he puts two on the board this year? 4.5? 2.5 more? You know, and I know obviously I'm talking about him getting well beyond that. I mean, you look at this right now, and I know it's, oh man, try not to get caught up. But SGA putting another season on the board of regular season MVP and finals MVP will at least end up the expectation for next year. The Thunder will be booked as title favorites. He then will be seen as the favorite to win finals MVP. And I think he opens his league MVP favorite for next year in front of Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now, I understand that this argument could all fall down if the Thunder collapse in the conference finals or don't get through the Knicks or Pacers in the NBA finals. But here is the reason I wanted to do this. Nobody's making the argument. It seems like we would have people sooner make the case that Shea is outside of the top four players in the world than make the case he's the best player in the world. We would see the Jokic, Giannis, Luka trio put in front of him, and then maybe someone will throw a Wemby out there. The Tatum people will do what they want to do. Ant people will. I don't know. I don't see it. Maybe a LeBron guy will get in the mix. Say Bron's still better than SGA. He's not. It doesn't look like anybody is. It just doesn't. And I think it's really incredible that right now, the conversation on a player who is making this incredible case for best in the world is incredibly favored to follow through on it and would then lay the foundations for an all-time career. That's what he's doing. If he gives you finals MVP, league MVP, same season, age 26, the conversation is free throw merch. Get out. What's going on? So I guess I'll be the bold one. I'll take the real estate. I'm the first one here on the land, it looks. We got open rooms. Open plots of land. I'm over here on SGA, best player in the world island. Who wants to come over? Real crowded over there. That Jokic spot. Good thing there aren't any conference finals MVPs or finals MVPs that you have to worry about right now taking up more real estate on Jokic, best player in the world island, to make room for everybody that's there. Jokic is great. I would have him no lower than two. I think it's acceptable to ask the best player in the world to make the conference finals. I think that's okay. More than twice in his career. I think that's all right. I also think it's totally all right to look at a guy favored to win league MVP, finals MVP in the same season, who's having a third straight season of 30-plus points per game, and go, that's the best player in the world. And to me, that is exactly what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, as long as the Thunder finish it out and win the championship this season. We'll do a podcast break and then talk about flag football next year. It's the Kevin Walsh Show.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
NFL superstars will seemingly take the Olympic stage in 2028 in Los Angeles. And This is one of those things that initially I was exclusively thinking about, man, that's cool. I now think we've got a couple of more questions surrounding this whole thing than initially I anticipated. I'm going to give you how I would fill out the roster. That roster, due to my best understanding, will have 10 NFL players and then two non-NFL players, which for the U.S., by the way, is not an issue. The non-NFL players will still likely be two of the very best players in the world. So, in the flag football world, that is. But I'll give you the NFL guys, how I'd fill that out. Five offense, five defense. There's a clear-cut first overall draft pick. We know that. You can probably figure out who it is. But I want to start with some of the questions, okay? Or maybe the big question that I have with this whole thing, which is, will participation be as high as expected? And what is actually the process of making this team going to look like? Because I've seen some reports, Peter Schrager of ESPN, say everyone's going to have to try out. And I just do not believe we're going to see a world where Mahomes, Lamar, Burrow, Allen are standing on the sidelines, Hurts, Stroud, just all practicing flag football, trying to make this roster, and then see all but one or two cut from the team. That just does not seem likely. You know, with the USA men's basketball team, they are invited, but a lot of them kind of come up through the system. They're a part of the scrimmages. It's a little bit easier to kind of get integrated into that family and then eventually again be a part of it. But you don't really have a situation where, you know, Jimmy Butler calls out Jason Tatum and says, I'm coming to tryouts and I'm going to take his spot. So to me, I actually think this has to look something similar to where the tryouts are a formality and the Flag Football Association or whomever's going to be in charge of it picks the roster, invites those players, and then they win the tryout because the expectation is still the NFL players that you invite to the tryout are not going to show up and then actually be outplayed by what will be likely then the, you know, current guys within the USA flag football system. But if all of a sudden, again, you're like, first come, first serve, I think that gets weird. I think you're going to have to pick your spots. I really believe that. And I also think that you're going to see the way that they've set this up of one guy per team make, again, those in charge have to be strategic about their invite strategy. Because if you call the Cincinnati Bengals and you offer Joe Burrow a slot, and then he turns it down, and then you go to Jamar Chase, Chase maybe goes, why wasn't I the first phone call? Because you can't have multiple Cincinnati Bengals on the team. So I think that there's going to have to be very open conversations all before this. Now, if both Burrow and Chase want a spot, which is their dream scenario, then they'll probably figure it out based on where are their other yeses. But again, I don't think Burrow and Chase are showing up to a field hoping to beat one another out to be the Cincinnati Bengal that makes the team. I really don't. So that is kind of just this really interesting spot, though, where they just have to be very smart about how they go about this, because this should be awesome and exciting, star-studded, you know, it's for those who weren't, there for the birth of the Dream Team, you kind of maybe are seeing that here with football. Now, it's not the same, right? Because it is a different sport. It would be as if the Dream Team was going to play slam ball instead of basketball, which would be awesome. I asked someone the other day, if I told you the Eastern Conference All-Stars were going to play the best slam ball team of all time, what would that look like? And after taking, 2 seconds to think about it, it's like, it would look bad, man. Like, there's just an athleticism, there's a height difference, there's a speed difference, and I think that's applicable to this all, because I know there are some who have, again, been playing, specifically flag football, who feel that they are being kind of pushed off of their spot. And I get how that's frustrating. I certainly do. But I do not think that there is much credence to the notion that they are better at flag football than the NFL players, when we're talking about the wide receivers and the DBs, because that's how you're going to fill this roster out. Like, at the end of the day, playing a lot of flag is not going to really help you stop Justin Jefferson. I just don't think that that's likely. And again, I watched some of the flag tape. None of those quarterbacks are really quarterbacks, which makes for a really interesting setup there, where the quarterback play that you can get from, the NFL might just be a complete kind of game changer in this whole thing. And we'll get to the quarterback slot. Just one other thing to think about is, will you see a desire from guys to play in this no matter what, and then try and pick up citizenship from other countries? And I believe there will be cases where countries will be super willing to give it out. Like, you're going to see it. If, let's think here. If Trevor Lawrence is like, man, I've always wanted to be in the Olympics, I'm pretty sure Germany would be like, love it. All in. Trevor Lawrence, starting quarterback. I think that if you had, C.J. Stroud, he's like, I'm a little squeezed out here. Me, Micah Parsons, and Ladd McConkey, we're going to Italy. We're Italian now. What's going on here? That's one of the I think, going to be the real fascinating thing if this all just ends up a high-level NFL scrimmage. If this becomes the best possible version of the Pro Bowl, again, it would be can't miss. It'll feel ridiculous if, Fabrizio Romano loses his spot to C.J. Stroud. But maybe that's how this plays out. It's on the board. Last thing with the roster construction, because then I'm going to give you how I think these teams, how I think this team should set up. I put what I feel will be the best possible team. You have to remember, this is 2028, so you factor in age a little bit. I do wonder if there is such a gap between what the NFL players can offer and everybody else in the world. I wonder if there's a world where star power is the leading candidate. If you just kind of go back, would they have taken 40-year-old Tom Brady? And we're like, no. Like, we can get Brady. Let's get Brady. I don't care if he can't move. Like, relative to, the way flag football is. You know, I don't have Saquon Barkley on this list. But is there a world where they're like, it's Saquon, just get him on the team. We'll be fine regardless. I think that that's very possible. So you start this out building this roster. By the way, here's how it goes, okay? You have a quarterback, three wide receivers, and a snapper. Initially, there's people who are like, ooh, do you stay in and block? We need some size. Those guys just kind of go out for routes right away. We're not, you know, pass blocking. So no, you're not doing any offensive linemen. But also, I don't really think you need to do a tight end. I really don't. Defense, it's four DBs and a rusher. But again, as far as the rushing goes, you want speed. You don't need Myles Garrett, TJ Watt. Like, there's no swim move. There's no rip. You're just running straight almost at the quarterback. So I filled this out looking just to get as many wide receivers and DBs as possible. So let me just say this off the bat. The very clear first overall draft pick for this whole thing is Travis Hunter. Not even a question. Look, I don't know how much they're going to let Travis Hunter play both ways in the NFL, but they'll let him play both ways in the Olympics. Not a doubt in my mind. Not a doubt in my mind. Travis Hunter is the first overall draft pick for this, which kind of almost then, from a pure football talent, might suggest he has the most in football. Like, you rank best players in the world, and you need performance and pedigree and positional value. But just raw football talent, Travis Hunter has an argument for the number one spot. He's the clear number one draft pick for this entire thing. And I'll make this pretty simple. I am, you know, slotting this right now as Hunter on the defensive side of the ball with Pat Surtain, Bronco cornerback, Sauce Gardner, Jets cornerback, Derek Stingley Jr., Texans cornerback, and Cooper DeJean, Eagles cornerback, rounding that out. Athleticism, speed, just talent. There won't be much scoring done against that group. Interceptions are super valuable. Ask Pat Mahomes about Cooper DeJean. This group would be a complete nightmare to go up against for any possible team out there. Here's the beauty as well, though, of having Travis Hunter, and if he can go both ways. You then can bring two quarterbacks. And by the way, from some of the tape I was watching, there are moments where you could play the two quarterbacks together. 100%. You can, you know, lateral it. And if now we're out there with two QBs of NFL talent, what a moment. What an incredible thing. So I went two QBs here. I'll tell you who they are in a second. The wide receivers. I think Justin Jefferson's been promised the spot. Makes sense. I think I would have given him one anyway. Let's get him and Chase back out there for old time's sake. Jamar Chase makes the team. The third wide receiver, and again, Hunter can be my fourth. I went Xavier Worthy. I don't think Tyreek Hill is going to be on the board when this comes around. Because I'm not sure Tyreek Hill, if this summer we were having the Flag Football Olympics, would make the team. Probably, but I'm not sure. The off-field stuff doesn't help. But in 3 years, it feels pretty unlikely. So you go to the heir apparent, the fastest player in the league. That's Xavier Worthy. I'll say you'll see some spots. Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. Jeremiah Smith of Ohio State, Ryan Williams of Alabama. There's no chance they make this team. I do not see any world in which the NFL has the representatives be two guys who will just be finishing their rookie seasons. I think that there is going to be still something that shades to guys that have been around the league for a while. Just a little bit longer, right? Like, those guys will have their chance in 2032, and they'll both probably be on the team. But I don't think you're going to see Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams on this team. By the way, just from a get me the unimaginable speed, I think Ryan Williams, even if Jeremiah Smith is better, I'd rather Ryan Williams for the flag football. Okay? But Xavier Worthy to me, the speed is incredible. So then we get to the quarterback position. And here's the deal. If with Xavier Worthy making the team, it means Mahomes isn't on the team. Please don't let GOAT debates factor into flag football. That's ridiculous. Obviously, Lamar Jackson's the quarterback. Obviously. And QB2 is Jaden Daniels. Kyler Murray gets consideration. I edged it to Jaden Daniels. It's flag football. You want the fastest quarterbacks out there with the most wiggle. With the clutch gene. That's silly. You know? Escapability in the NFL and escapability in flag football, not the same. Lamar and Jaden Daniels, obviously. And to me, I think the only way that this could go wrong for USA would be if the quarterback slot ended up with an injury, like in game, and you then found yourself on a more level playing field at what should still be the most important position. So you now have a ton of security. And I think you can run plays with both Lamar and Jaden Daniels out there. Because ultimately, you run a lateral and get it to Lamar in some type of space, I'm not sure they're grabbing that flag. So now some people can kind of live out their dream of Lamar Jackson being a skill position player. So that's the team. It'll be rounded out by, again, two fantastic guys that are already kind of a part of the USA flag football system. But offense, give me Lamar Jackson and Jaden Daniels. Give me Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Xavier Worthy. On defense, give me Pat Surtain, Cooper DeJean, Derek Stingley Jr., Sauce Gardner, and then starting on defense, but literally playing everywhere, and the first overall pick of this whole thing, Mr. Flag Football, potentially. Future, maybe multi-time gold medalist, Travis Hunter. That's where I'm at with the flag football. Really excited. It's a long time away. We may not talk about it again for years, but I'm into it. I'm into the flag football. Before we do the break, I ask of you. Rate, review, in the review, tell me the player you most want to see make the flag football roster. 2028. I'd like to hear it. We'll do a podcast break. We'll come back. Some NFL coaches/Eagles headlines here on the Kevin Walsh Show.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Philadelphia Eagles had themselves a great week. Tush push, not banned. Nick Sirianni extended. I'm not going to have a big tush-push conversation. The NFL, I'll just say, saved face by not banning the play associated with their Super Bowl champs off of the Super Bowl winning season. To suggest that the ramp up and banning the play from other teams was a coincidence and it had nothing to do with the Eagles winning is ridiculous. And it's a good thing it was not banned. We'll see what that conversation looks like a year from now. Potentially the season that the Eagles have will once again dictate the desire to get rid of the play. Which takes us to Nick Sirianni, because if Nick Sirianni's track record is to tell us anything about the year the Eagles are going to have, they'll at least be in the playoffs. Nick Sirianni was extended by the Philadelphia Eagles, an obvious decision as somebody who was on the trajectory of an all-time great head coach. That extension led to some places talking about the best coaches in football. Many, people who talk to me know, and I'm going to call it straight out, I'm a fan of Nick Wright's work. Does good work. He ranked the top 10 coaches in football after we saw Nick Sirianni extended. Tacked on 3 honorable mentions, all in front of Nick Sirianni, according to him. So let's just use that list to prove how preposterous that is. Because Nick Sirianni, through my lens, should be no worse than 3 on any list. Any notion he's not one of the top 10 coaches is completely laughable. Since Nick Sirianni took over, the Eagles are tied for the 2nd most wins in football. Chiefs are number 1. They're tied with the Buffalo Bills. Since Nick Sirianni took over, the Eagles have made the playoffs all 4 seasons. The only other teams to do that, Kansas City, Buffalo, as well as Tampa Bay. Tampa, though, has had multiple coaches through that run. So it's once again just Andy Reid, Sean McDermott, and Nick Sirianni. Here's the thing, though, with Sean McDermott. Does not have anywhere near the postseason success of Nick Sirianni. Because Nick Sirianni and that trip to the Super Bowl, well, that wasn't a one-time thing, was it? No. In 4 seasons, Sirianni has been to the Super Bowl multiple times. List of active head coaches to make 2 Super Bowls. Sirianni, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike Tomlin. So when you're separating Sirianni and McDermott, there's a gulf. There is a gulf when it comes to the postseason success. You look at those multiple Super Bowls made. Kyle Shanahan's whole Super Bowl gimmick is blowing double-digit leads. No thanks. Plays look great. Scheme is wonderful. Got a ton out of Jimmy Garoppolo. Gets even more out of Brock Purdy. I'm not ranking Kyle Shanahan as one of the 5 best coaches, certainly not a top 3 coach, when his whole thing is blowing Super Bowls. Certainly not over a guy who just dominated the Kansas City Chiefs when they, if they won the game, would have had a claim to the best dynasty in league's history, ripping off the first ever Super Bowl three-peat. And the Eagles absolutely dominated them, eviscerated them, left them for dead. Could have been a 50-point blowout if the Eagles kept going the way Jalen Hurts wanted to. Sean McVay, I'll hear the argument. 100%, I get it. Has a Super Bowl trophy, made multiple Super Bowls, ton of winning in L.A. I'm not going to attack McVay, though McVay and Nick Sirianni have played a couple of times. They've all gone Nick Sirianni's way, including in the postseason this year. So you may try and point to that game and say, well, you know, Sirianni almost blew it. First of all, didn't. Second of all, it's incredible how every single time the Eagles have ever once called a bad play, it's Sirianni who called it. But every other time they've ran good plays that, I don't know, have resulted in them going and winning the Super Bowl, those are apparently were Shane Steichen's plays or Kellen Moore's plays. Which, by the way, for some reason, all that turnover that Philadelphia has had and yet all the winning that has stayed consistent, somehow not Sirianni's credit. The fact that he has made the Super Bowl with a different set of offensive and defensive coordinators, somehow him being the consistent key, no credit for that. Interesting how it works. Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, nonsensical arguments. Absolutely ridiculous. Mike Tomlin has not won a playoff game in forever. The Steelers have not been legit in the longest time. Stop, please. That's craziness. I mean, Mike Tomlin is out there running a team that feels much closer to a college football tough nose. Oof, you do not want to play that group. But not certainly someone that you're actually thinking can win a championship. Pete Carroll was moved on from by Seattle. And Brady, stealing a little bit from the Patriot way of not having a monstrous Rolodex, went to somebody he knew in bringing in Pete Carroll. There's no way we're making a Pete Carroll argument. That is wild. Here's the other thing, though, about Nick Sirianni, multiple 14-win seasons. The only other coach in the league who has multiple 14-win seasons is Andy Reid, none of which were with the Philadelphia Eagles, by the way. Now, maybe I'm cheating a little bit, though, because we recently opened the door for teams to go 14-3 instead of 13-3. So here are the active head coaches who have been 13-3 or better multiple times. Sean McDermott, Matt LaFleur, Sean Payton, and of course, Andy Reid. Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, MVP. Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, MVP. Andy Reid, obviously, Pat Mahomes. Sean Payton, Drew Brees, never won an MVP. Though, 4 second-place finishes for Drew Brees under his belt. Because Sean Payton was somehow on the list of coaches better than Nick Sirianni. That's interesting. That feels ridiculous. That feels like a reach back into the nostalgia bucket. I mean, Sean Payton has a Super Bowl. He's made the Super Bowl less times than Sirianni, though, in quite a few other chances. Matt LaFleur, let me tell you this. This guy's taking the cake for most overrated coach in football. Sirianni owns him, 3-0. The Eagles abused that team this year in the playoffs. His offense couldn't score. And all that success with Rodgers, now because nobody likes Rodgers, which I understand and largely agree with, none of it was LaFleur's fault whatsoever. The fact that they kept winning 13-plus games, the fact that Rodgers was the league MVP, that they had home field through the playoffs, the fact that they lost the conference championship game to Brady's Bucks, and then didn't even make the conference championship game and lost to Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers. And if memory serves, that's a group that then didn't even proceed to win that conference championship game. That was the year the Rams beat them. I don't think that holds up. I don't think that tracks. That Matt LaFleur, because people didn't think Jordan Love was going to be great and had himself a great second half the first year as a full-time starter and followed it up with a disappointing season last year, should be ranked in front of Nick Sirianni. That's outrageous. These all names I saw listed in front of Sirianni. Kevin O'Connell. Woo! Sirianni, first of all, 2-0 against Kevin O'Connell. Speaking of two chances, O'Connell's had two of them in the playoffs, both as a favorite, lost both. Kevin O'Connell lost to Daniel Jones at home in a playoff game. Daniel Jones, get real. Get real. Better than Nick Sirianni. Get real. Lost to Daniel Jones. Now I'm getting hot. Now I'm getting hot. Because you didn't think Sam Darnold was anything. Agreed. You didn't think Sam Darnold was anything. Had a good season with Sam Darnold. Next thing you know, Kevin O'Connell's one of the 5 best coaches in football. Whoa, 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 whoa. Chance for the 1 seed. Week 18. They couldn't move the ball. They were a nightmare. Playoffs. Sam Darnold didn't have it. All Darnold's fault? Whose fault was it when they lost to Daniel Jones? Get real. Dan Campbell on the list. Sirianni 2-0 against him as well. What's Dan Campbell's excuse for getting smoked by Washington? You know that the team Philly put 55 on? What's going on here? Where's the credit pie? Somehow the Eagles don't have a top 5 quarterback or a top 10 coach and just went to the Super Bowl twice with that duo. How's that happen? Saquon wasn't there the first time they went. Is A.J. Brown the best receiver in the NFL history? What's going on? Is Lane Johnson the best right tackle the league's ever seen? Probably. Shout out Lane Johnson, future Hall of Famer. Jason Kelce wasn't there both years. What's going on here? What's going on here? Mike Vrabel makes the cut, fired in Tennessee? D'Amico Ryans makes the cut, had to fire his OC year two? What's going on here? What am I seeing? What is this list? It's bad. Here's the beautiful thing, though. 13 guys suggested. Again, I'm calling it straight out. Awful list by Nick Wright. Awful, awful list. A lot of good stuff. Like his work, really. But Eagles have been beating him up now for quite some time. Nick Sirianni against the 13 names listed as better than him by Nick Wright. He is 17-6 against those coaches straight up with a tidy little 4-1 in the playoffs. 17-6 straight up, 4-1 in the playoffs, the only loss to Andy Reid, the first go-around in the Super Bowl. Sirianni has a very real claim to best coach in the world. The questions around Sirianni is where he will end up on the all-time list of coaches in NFL history. Not if he is top 10, not if he is elite. Kevin O'Connell, Matt LaFleur. Get real. Get real. Oh, that whole NFC North. Ben Johnson gets himself in the crossfires, doesn't understand that the tush push is a winning play, wants it to be explosive. Bears fans, I'm just saying, hand over the panic button. It might be time. Ben Johnson maybe lacks some of that situational awareness that sometimes is true for Dan Campbell. We don't need to open the Lions and Bears conversations. It's only May. It's only May. And it's only episode 4 of the Kevin Walsh Show. Tidy little Football Friday here with you. It is a Sports Grid podcast. It is a blast to talk to you. We'll be back next week. Make sure you, again, rate, review, subscribe to the Kevin Walsh Show. We'll do it next time.